welcome to the 7th episode of the Braai Box podcast. We are your co-hosts, Pieter and Rion, and we started this podcast with the main purpose of providing free education for all South Africans. Now today, we are going to discuss how to choose your bank account. It's such a basic thing, but also such an important aspect that's not always discussed a lot. And whilst bank accounts, we all need them, there are a lot of stuff that you need to know before choosing one, because some banks are very expensive, they have good benefits, but others, you don't need all the fancy bells and whistles, and you maybe just need the most basic one so that you can save money. So we're going to tackle a couple of different accounts. We're going to explain what they are, how they are used, the benefits, the pitfalls, and then we're going to kind of give a guidance of for which type of needs do we have this specific bank account needed. So we really want to help you guys just decide which bank account you need and that you find one that's fit for purpose. And this is, you know, one of the most important things that you need to know starting out in your career. And if you already have a bank account, to do some reflection to decide, is this really what meeting your needs at this point in your life?
Yeah. I think just before you jump in, Pieter, I think it's important just again for the new listeners to our podcast. The real purpose of Braai Box is really almost to get from a foundational point of view up until the more complex topics that we'll cover later on. So I feel like in South Africa, we are seeing that financial education isn't always freely available. It's not something that we learn in schools. So if you are following the journey with us as well, we will get to these interesting topics of investing and tax-free savings accounts and how can you save tax in different scenarios, etc., you know, in the future.
Crypto arbitrage, forex trading.
Exactly. But it's so important for us to really start from the basics, because that's where everyone ultimately needs to start somewhere. And our platform is not to just talk about the high hype type of conversations, but it is really to provide an education from a basic level up to a more advanced level later on.
Yeah. You guys need to learn to crawl before you can fly. Today, we're going to learn how to crawl.
Yeah.
Right. So let's kick it off today. Now, you kind of need a bank account. There's the obvious stuff. You know, you work, you earn a salary, you need somewhere to receive your salary, and you need to make payments, because we're not living in the old age anymore where you have to use cash all the time. It's actually more expensive to use cash and it's a high risk. So we're moving towards a digital era. So really, what types of banks accounts are out there? So I'm going to start with the most basic one. It's called a pay as you use account. This is now where you go onto these big banks, your Nedbank, your FNB, Capitec. It's usually the most cheapest little bank account that they tell you, oh, it's only our banking fees only 5 rand a month. That sounds wonderful. Why not? So these bank accounts are created for the low income type of clients or customers, or the people that don't really need a bank for a lot of different things. So the monthly amount is usually very low. It's either free or it's like $5 or $10. But you have to be careful with these ones, because although the monthly fee is low, you pay for every single transaction you make. So pay as you use, exactly that. So although the advertisement may seem low, you'll notice that every time you have a debit order that goes off, or you tap to pay, or you draw cash, that's a cost. And it's adding all of these little hidden costs up to amounting it to a certain amount, and then seeing, you know, is this really profitable for me? Or because I've often found that I got caught with one of these. I thought, yeah, no, I want to save on banking fees. I'm going to go for the cheapest, pay as you use. And next thing you know, you've done your budget for 3 months. You're like, geez, I'm paying way more than I would have paid for a bundled account that includes a lot of these transactions. So there's a lot of nice resources on the internet to see kind of which bank accounts are best suited for my needs. If you never really use your account, you basically just receive a salary. Maybe you make a payment or two, maybe you draw some cash, then this will likely be fine for you. You have minimal banking needs. You don't really aspire to the whole rewards programs. You don't need a credit card, all of that. This is a very good bank account to start out with. But as soon as you've kind of seen that you've paid a lot of things and the banking fees are getting quite high, then it's maybe not in your best interest anymore to use these.
Yeah, I think a good use case for the people listening today is when my wife and I just got married, we decided to combine our finances, and we decided to use my bank account as the transactional bank account. So we actually got a pay-as-you-use bank account for her. So effectively what it did was really receive her salary. There were four or five debit orders, and then she would transfer the rest over to my bank account, or our bank account, rather, our combined bank account. And that is then where we would buy our food, pay all of our bills, and et cetera. So how we actually worked it is she would have the bank account, I would pay with my phone, but we both have full access to our bank account. In that case, it actually made a whole lot of sense, because you pay a very low amount and you've got four or five debit orders that goes through on that account, and that's it. So you pay minimal bank fees. So I think if that's a scenario where you find yourself in where you don't have a lot of transactions, this is the account that can be beneficial.
When we move past pay-as-you-use accounts, the next step is kind of like, okay, so you get the pay-as-you-use accounts that are for the low transaction needs, and then you get the bundled accounts that are more like they typically include like 12 transactions, 18 transactions, 30 transactions, and then you kind of move up the tiers of a bank account. So now that we understand kind of the difference between the two users, what types of accounts can you actually open? If you go onto your app and you open an account, what are the first most common account that you can open?
Yeah, the most common account really in South Africa, I would say, is a check account. So it's really almost like a transactional account. So that's really for something that you will almost use on a daily basis. So it's the card that you tap or you swipe or you pay with your phone on all of your transactions. And like you said, it's normally like a bundle. So you have, for example, a certain amount of ATM withdrawals, a certain amount of deposits that you can make, a certain amount of actual payment transactions, etc., that's incorporated into that first or that initial cost per month. I think where this is different is the cost per month in the beginning might seem a little bit higher. So every bank also has a different fee structure. So these accounts have different costs, and cost per transaction is different as well. But these are normally per transaction the cheapest account that you can use in South Africa. So if you've got a whole bunch of transactions that you need to pay for, this is most probably the best one that you can use. And I think the account also provides you with a few things. So you've got the flexibility of doing whatever you want to do with it. So you can transfer, you can pay, like I mentioned, in different ways and formats. But also you've got the ability to set up some automation in this account. So you can set up debit orders and you can set up, for example, scheduled payments. So for me, what I normally do is I know, for example, I need to pay a certain amount to my son's school every month. So that's actually a scheduled payment. So it's not something that I need to actively think about and go in EFT. I know the school fees every month is exactly the same. So I'll just schedule it for the 28th of the month. So it helps you with that automation. And I think that this is also the account that you can almost set up in a way to help you with your saving goals later on. So as you have got open your different savings accounts, or maybe like an Easy Equities account, etc., you can set up that debit order or that scheduled payment on a monthly basis. So you don't have to actively think about actually putting away that money. It just happens.
Yeah, it really helps and kind of ties back to our previous episode where you want to automate all of these things. And that's typically your debit orders will come from your check account where your salary, you receive your salary, debit order goes off to pay for your essential expenses, to pay for your savings. And then the rest of the money is kind of what you left over to then use for day-to-day living expenses, your groceries, your fuel, your fun stuff.
Exactly.
Discretionary spending.
All your discretionary spending. I mean, you need to go buy a milk and bread or anything like that. Yeah. It's your normal transactional account.
Yeah. Yes. So it's a good account, but are there some risks to using a check account? Or what do we actually need to be careful with check accounts?
Yeah, I think a check account is, so it can be expensive. So again, I would implore you to go and do your research. Just go and read all of the banks. So if you're interested in a specific bank, just go and read what the fee structure actually looks like. Like I said, it can actually be a bit complex and you need to understand what you get yourself into before you make that commitment. If you're ready with the bank, just go and see. They all have their terms and conditions and their fee structure somewhere. So just go and look on their website. But the monthly fee can, like I said, can differ, but it can be high sometimes. But again, you need to take into consideration your own needs and then what you'll use it for. So there are also specific accounts that you can get where you pay a monthly fee, but you don't, you know, your individual transactions is almost zero or is zero. So if you know that you're someone that will have, I don't know, over 150 transactions a month, then that's maybe an option. The other one is that banks can provide overdraft facilities on these accounts. And I think it is something that you need to be conscious of. So it is a bad debt as we will define it. So it's short-term unsecured debt and you will pay high interest fees on these. Again, these will probably differ between banks and different accounts. So before you say, yes, I want to overdraft, be very sure of what you will actually pay for that.
It's often an overdraft activation fee that kicks in that can be quite expensive. That's similar to a credit facility fee if you use a credit card. But an overdraft is the banks always position it as, you know, it's fine, you can go, you don't, if you run out of money, just use your overdraft, it's fine. Be very careful of that, because as soon as you start getting into that habit, you're kind of putting your hand in the into the cookie jar every month, you pay for that actual activation fee and you also pay an interest rate. So try and avoid overdraft facilities if you can. Sometimes you really have no other choice, but that's why we're building an emergency fund, because we have to see an overdraft as something that we don't really want to use at all.
Exactly, yeah. So for me, the overdraft is almost something that you should really stay away from. If there's, you know, I think there's better ways to fund that, that if you don't, you know, have enough money for that particular month, like you said, an emergency fund. So plan, maybe planning for these things if you can, or other methods like a credit card as an option. But an overdraft can be expensive, so be very sure to know what you get yourself into before you tell the bank, yes, activate that.
Yeah, I think the only, what I've seen is the only time that I'd say fine, use an overdraft is if you just started working, you know, you now need to put down 2 months of deposit for rent, you need to buy furniture because you come from the university where you owned nothing. You need to buy to pay for appliances. You haven't even earned a salary. So fine, use the overdraft facility for that month, but very make very sure to pay that thing off as soon as possible and don't use it again. So unless it's really necessary, try and avoid it, as it's just going to cause you to want to overspend and living beyond your means.
So the last thing I want to add on that is it's normally not something that's just included in your bundle. So the bank actually needs to activate it. So you need to tell them to activate it. So if you don't need it, don't even activate it. So like I know for my, as my example is, I have a checking account and I don't have an overdraft facility. And I keep getting SMSs and emails from Standard Bank and you can qualify. apply for this overdraft facility. And it's like, nope, no thank you.
So you can qualify yourself.
Yes.
Also, we often refer to it as check accounts because back in the day, you know, it's for the kids out there, you actually had to go to the bank. And I remember my mom like writing on a little piece of paper when you deposit money. You had to like
a little red.
You have to go to there in the corner with your pen and write down and put your physical cash. So that's where the check name came from. You had to use a check. So it's these days more often referred to as a current account. So it's a current account, check account. It's the same thing, transactional account. Same but different. So yeah, that's kind of day-to-day transactions, and it's for people that needs to use their bank more often than just a pay-as-you-use, very basic one.
Yeah, so it's called something else, but it's the same purpose.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So then the next account that you can commonly open is called the savings account. So it's very kind of self-explanatory. It's where you actually put your money to save. So it's obviously important to start building up savings because we've talked about this in the past. We want to build up an emergency fund. We want to save for short-term saving goals, you know, less than 12 months. And a savings account is quite easy to open. You can usually just go on your app and open a savings account. Most of the time it's free. You earn some interest on it. So it's at least better to than keeping everything in your check account to transfer money into your savings account. I also think from a risk perspective, it's better to not try keep all your money in your check account. You've got your salary deposit and there's like 5 days until the debit orders goes off. Take some of it and put it into the savings account just in case someone taps into your card and they steal it. You know, if you've got money in your savings account, it's another step. And it's also good to start getting into the habit of putting money intentionally into your savings account. It helps to grow. It earns interest. It's usually not a lot. It's usually barely beating inflation, but it's better than earning nothing on a check account. And it's again, building the habit of saving and being intentional every month. You can even set a debit order from your check account into your savings account to start building your emergency fund.
So just on that, there's you can also open multiple savings accounts in normally from your bank that you are with. So FNB, Standard Bank, Absa, Capitec, whatever. So if you've got different savings objectives, especially short-term savings objectives, you can open one for each one.
Yeah.
And then just almost deposit like that. And then, you know, okay, for this specific objective, this is where I am and this is how far I still need to go.
Yeah, and that's very nice. If you tie back to our previous episode when we talked about financial goals, then you can quantify, this is my savings bucket for my traveling, this is for my holiday, this is for child's education next year. And you put money intentionally and you see those little buckets growing over time. So the most common kind of like benefits is it's easy to put money into a savings account. It's also easy to take money out again. So be careful to not to dip into that emergency fund if you see a special. So again, you need to try and put some artificial barrier there so that you don't dip into your savings that you've been using for something else. If that is something that you struggle with, then it might be better to put it either then in a longer term savings account. So you get your immediate access savings account that you can literally take money in out as you want. You get your 7-day notice accounts, which means you need to put in notice for 7 days, then it will pay out. Get like 32-day notice accounts. Then the longer you go, you get a fixed deposit of 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, sometimes 5 years. So the longer you tie your money with the bank, the better the interest rate you'll receive. So obviously, if you put your money in a 5-year fixed deposit, you're going to receive a higher interest rate than a short-term immediate access savings account, because you're essentially giving the bank your money and they then lend it out to other people for car loans and credit cards, and they make a lot of profit. So it's quantifying what you need that specific savings for. And if you have an emergency fund, it may not make sense to put that into a 3-month fixed deposit, because your emergency will most likely need to be paid
before
then.
Not wait for you to
yeah, give it's not going to give you like, shame, it's in this 3 months. Yeah, and that's fine, I'll wait. The car will wait, you know, we just broke down, but we'll fix it and then we'll wait 3 months. No, it's not. So emergency funds need to be accessible. I'd probably say the latest is like a 7-day, because you can maybe get by without that. So it's important to save. It's also important to understand that saving is different than investing. Saving is short term. It's preserving your money. Yes, you see the physical rand amount increasing every month and every year. But remember, inflation is a big risk. If we think everything becomes more expensive every year, if inflation is 5% and your savings account is also getting 5%, you are just maintaining the value of your money. Yes, the rand amount increases, but the real value stays the same. So if we say for short term, 0 to 12 months, maybe up to 3 years, a bank savings account could be used for that. But you can't build long-term wealth by keeping everything in the bank. And if you start earning more interest after the annual interest exemption threshold, you start paying taxes again. So be very careful not to hoard cash if you don't have a specific reason. If you're saving for a house deposit, fine. But don't put all your money in savings just because you think it's safe. Because it's not safe from inflation. It's also not safe from a long-term growth perspective. And you might start paying more tax later on.
Yeah. So where you put your money should actually be tied into the purpose of that money. So if it's short term, keep it in the savings account. If it's longer term, rather invest it. But just also another point on that, I think banks have so many products out there in terms of savings accounts. So if you need to open a savings account, just go to your bank as a start, I would say, and go and look at all of the products that they provide. And normally all of the terms are on there as well. So if it's a fixed deposit bond, fixed deposit account, or a 7-day notice account, or a money market account, they will normally put the rules and interest and etc. on there for you, so you can compare all of these. But there's also sites that you can go to, like for example Rate Compare, where you can see where someone has done some research in terms of what interest rates what banks will give you, so you can see in that form of, you know, where you want to save your money.
Yeah, we'll put a link to Rate Compare Walter is the person that compiles it. And if you're part of his newsletter, every month he sends you a report of the best rates. So also be conscious that the savings that you receive might change every month, because it's dependent, it's coupled to the repo rate. So if the repo rate goes up or down, or then the savings amount that the banks will offer you also go up and down. So it's not necessarily that the amount you receive today, the interest rate will always stay like that. It can go higher, it can go lower. But again, don't try and overcomplicate things to go and move all your stuff to another bank, because you can get 0.1% more in your savings. It's really not going to, in the grand scheme of things, you're going to maybe make cents, a couple of cents extra, a couple of rands, but the actual hassle of changing. Most of the big banks are all good. I don't think there's like...
And they're very, very close to each other. So if someone gives a better interest rate, it's going to be like 0.05% or something. Yeah.
So please don't waste your time on that. Rather have savings, but where you need to spend most of your time is growing your wealth in the investing side, which we'll get to later when you already learned how to crawl. Then you start walking, and then we'll talk about investments.
Yeah. So I think the next account is a credit account that we can talk about. And a credit account is really what we all know as a credit card. So it's you spending money effectively that you don't have at this point in time. So you're spending the bank's money. And guess what? You'll need to repay that money with a bit of interest with it. So normally the credit cards do have a 55-day interest-free period, but it's also very important to go look in terms of when that 55-day starts and when the payment due date is. So yes, they do normally say that it's 55 days. In some cases, you might just misstep and actually pay interest.
Yeah.
To be better at that, I would say actually just at the end of the month, just make sure that your credit card every month is at zero.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you run the risk of paying some interest. Again, the credit card is something that we will define as bad debt. So it is short-term unsecured debt with normally very high interest rates. It's not uncommon to hear about like in the 20s of percentage points, on credit cards. So it's really not a cheap form of credit. So the use of this credit card will be almost similar to the overdraft, where you'll only use it really in circumstances where you really need to, or it will be for individuals that is really good at managing their money and know exactly how to manage their debt. And because I know there are some people that will say, I can use my credit card and get all of the benefits of my rewards program and the points are so much more, the e-bucks or, except the different banks also have all of them have different rewards points, etc. Normally, it's more on a credit card. So if you are someone that knows, okay, I can do my monthly transactions, but at the end of the month, I pay everything back to my credit card. It is something that you can use. And it is also an effective tool for getting your credit score build up. So if you are starting out, and maybe we can cover the credit score in a bit more detail when we go into debt, but if you're starting out, you'll need to get a credit score to get better interest rates in the future and stuff that you need to take out. So if you need to take a car loan or a home loan or whatever, the better your credit score, the better interest rate you'll get. So it is an effective tool. So to take out debt and to repay it, to over time build up that credit score.
Yeah. So a credit card is a double-edged sword. It can become a very powerful tool in your financial toolkit, but it can also cut you deeply. So starting out, you need to learn why do we use credit cards, because the banks are clever. They're out there to make money. It's a business. So they would advertise credit cards, and the rewards programs would be driving an incentive to use your credit card, because not only do they make a bit more money if merchants use credit facilities because they pay the banks a specific amount, but also it's easy to fall into the debt trap. And obviously, the high interest they can make from you, the more money they can make. So learning why do we use a credit card to build a credit history so that you can save a lot of money later on in life, that makes absolutely sense. Because yes, when you have to take out a loan at the bank, they want to see what was your ability to pay back debt. If you don't have a credit score, you're going to be classified as a high risk client. It's just how it works. It's a rigged system. We just need to accept that. So,
unfortunately.
You need to learn how to use a credit card. And if you are currently in a position where you've really got dug into a hole of having a lot of different credit cards, you've got it maxed out, then you should first of all make a plan to get out of that and cut up your credit cards and never touch them again. So there's definitely merit to building a credit score. And if you, hopefully if you listen to our episodes, you will start to learn how to use them responsibly, but just be careful of them. So how we kind of structure our finances, we're with FNB, they've got nice e-bucks. So we've used our check account for all our debit orders for insurance, medical aid, investments, all of that, where we receive salary. And then we use our credit card for all our day-to-day expenses. So we buy our groceries at Checkers, we buy our fuel at Engine, day-to-day stuff that we tap to pay. And then at the end of every month, we have a routine, the 30th, we sit down, we see, okay, I've got 10,000 Rand outstanding on my credit card. I make an EFT payment from my check account or from my savings, and I pay it off religiously every single month so that you don't go into debt and you don't go. So if you use it as a tool that you use responsibly, go for it. The rewards programs are great, but don't get swayed by the sweet talk of using credit, and don't think of it as free money, because it's not. It's very expensive money.
So it is for me that sweet, sweet nectar of falling for the debt trap. So I would almost think, you know, if you know you're not someone that religiously pays it off like Peter here, then you know, rather try and avoid it. And for me, it's also not something that you need to think of as your emergency type of fund.
Please.
It's really not that.
It's not a piggy bank, and it's not free. And be careful of banks sending you emails and SMSs. You qualify for this. You qualify for a credit card. You qualify for a personal loan. No, you don't. If you don't need it, you don't qualify. It's they're not trying to be nice. They're trying to make money. So, yeah, be careful of credit cards.
That's a good saying. The banks are not trying to be nice. They're trying to make money.
Yeah, exactly. Like even if you see the reward programs, like us, we make about between 1,000 and 1,500 Rand a month back in e-bucks. But I always tell my wife, we're not winning. We're just losing less. Because the bank is always winning. It's a business model. Yeah. So you can lose less by playing their game, because they drive incentives to how, you know, the rewards program drives your incentive that will still make them more money. And if you want to play their game, go for it. But then you have to do your homework and you have to be responsible. Otherwise, you cannot burn your cut your fingers off. Okay, so now we've covered the check accounts, the savings accounts, the credit accounts. But now there's also like a little step up to that. Some banks called private banking, they are more in the premium range. Like you have to actually qualify. You have to earn a certain amount. You can't just walk into and demand an account. You have to like be selected to join them. So it's very like an exclusive thing. And if you swipe out your nice little black card, everyone, you in your mind think it like, oh, so look fancy. At this guy. Yeah. He's a premium business. So it... There are some benefits to private banking that we'll discuss, but there's also some, I think it's very much an overflaunted type of account. That's just my opinion. But the whole purpose behind a private bank is to target a very specific type of client, people that are typically your high net worth. They're very busy. They've got a lot of stuff going on in life, and they would rather just pay to have a specific person they can talk to, a private banker. So it's typically someone that's not list to go and stand in the row at the bank. They would rather pay 300 Rand a month more just so they can speak to someone directly and get stuff sorted. So if it's someone that time is very valuable and you are a person that earns a lot and you see that your hourly rate is so high, then it might make sense to have a private banker to have, you know, if you have an issue, you can just send them a message and they sort it out. So it kind of provides you that personalized service. And it also sometimes helps you to have access to exclusive products. So one of the main benefits that I think private banking does offer that I've seen is if you are a young professional, maybe you are an intern doctor and you have a need to buy a car, then typically what the private banks would do is they understand that you've got a good qualification. So your future earning potential is high and you are a valued client in their eyes because you've got money. So they would offer you preferential rates on your car or your home loan. And that can be massive. If they give you like a prime minus 1% interest rate on your car, currently that would be 10.75%. You would probably pay like 14%, 13, 14% at another bank. And that 4% difference, it can save you a lot of money way more than the fee for the bank account. So buying a house, buying a car for young professionals, then private banking does make sense, I've seen. Private banking is targeted at a very small group of clients, high net worth people, for a specific reason, because it is more expensive. So you really have to sit down and think about the costs of the bank account and then go and see what are your needs and do you really want to pay 300, 400 rand a month for that bank account? And if so, if it does mean that you get better service, you get better rates on your interest, sometimes they also have nice investment options. Although I don't think the banks offer the best investment products, though, which we'll cover at a later stage, then it's more paying for convenience and maybe some exclusivity. You get more access to slow lounges if you fly. So if you're a business person and you fly frequently, you know the rewards programs are a bit better. So if you can milk the system and it makes sense, then do it. But it's just because you qualify doesn't mean you have to be a private client.
Yeah. And like you said, it is really targeted for the high net worth individuals and that can really afford that higher premium. For me, it does make sense because of the preferential rates I've got on my cars and my house. I like to think that I'm saving, but it's still a lot of money going to bank fees just to have an account with someone. It actually is mind baffling.
Next step is now that we kind of know all the different bank accounts, is there like a way to just summarize it on how do we, if we put them together, how do we decide which one to choose or how do we compare different accounts from different banks?
Yeah, I think for me, choosing a bank account is not something that you, again, should spend hours and hours on. I think it's not something that if you chose the wrong bank account that will ultimately stop you from reaching financial freedom or wealth or reaching your financial objectives. Ultimately, all of them provide the same service. So I think it really goes around personal preference for me. So a very important thing for me from a bank account or a bank is the customer service that I receive. So if I have an issue or I need to do something from the bank, I want to be in and out as quickly as possible. And the people must talk to me in a friendly and respectful manner. I don't want to stand in long queues, get a ticket and then stand there for half an hour before anyone actually greets me. So that's personal preference, I feel like. But important also is to look at things like your fee structures. So your different banks will all have different fee structures for the same product. So go and look at it. Naturally, there will be different interest rates at different banks for your savings accounts, but also for your credit cards. And like we said earlier, so go to Rate Compare and go see where you maybe get the best interest rate. But again, like you mentioned earlier, Peter, the interest rates from the different banks also change frequently. So, I mean, the APSA might give you the best rate today. In 3 months' time, it might be Investec. So if you make your decision on that, purely on that, you might be disappointed a little bit later in your life. But other things that is important is also like your rewards program. So if you are someone that wants to play the game, there is benefit in that. So if, like you're saying, you're making about 1,000, 1,500 rand a month on e-bucks, I mean, that's not insignificant. So go and look at the reward programs, how do they actually work. For me, again, if you have the time to read through all of that, every bank, again, has a different reward program and different rules. And some have tiers and some have points and some have e-bucks. Like, it can be complicated. So, again, I would rather, for me, personalize it in terms of what is my needs, will the bank provide it, is the fee structure more or less in my price class, and then just use the reward program that the bank that you are with in the best way that you can.
Yeah. Rewards programs, you really have to spend time and understand them, and the rules also change all the time. So I know Discovery is also a good example of a system that if you understand the ecosystem very well, you can benefit from it. But if you're not going to spend the time, you're just going to pay more for stuff that you don't need. And again, they know how the system works. They're not going to lose money. Maybe they'll lose money on you, but they're going to make money on the three others that doesn't understand the system. So I guess it boils down to only pay what you're going to use and be intentional. Don't be oblivious to banking fees. Because if you don't go through your bank statements, you're going to miss that. Oh, I'm actually paying per transaction. And she's like, I could have just used a bundled account. I would have saved a couple of $100. It's not going to make you a millionaire. It's not going to put you into extreme poverty, but it's still good to have a bank that is accessible. It has good customer service. Maybe there's some rewards programs, and it's suited for your needs. And then sometimes you started with a bank when you were young. Your parents opened an account, and that's been what you've used your entire life. And then at some point, your needs change, and you have to maybe take out a home loan. And now your bank, you thought it's going to offer you the best rate, and it's not the case. And then you move accounts. So you can always move, but it is a bit of a hassle because you now have to go into the bank or do an online application and you move stuff around. And then tax season comes and you need to draw statements from both accounts. So again, don't make drastic moves unless there's like a good reason for it. And don't spend so too much time on this. Really choose a bank. All of the big banks are good, I think. Be careful of like random new names that pop up. Be careful of scams, obviously. Don't go for something that's too good to be true. But that's concluding all of that is really just sitting down, thinking about your financial needs, deciding on a bank, deciding on the accounts you want to open, being intentional about it, and don't spend more than what is needed.
Yeah. Just on the fees quickly, I think it is important to look at it, and you need to intentionally look at it, like you said. So, I mean, if you're paying 200 Rand a month more than you should on a bank account, it's like over a 20, 30 year period, that is actually a substantial amount if you stick with that account. So, yeah, do the research, make sure it's into your needs, and make sure you don't pay more than you should. It's really... Yeah,
that for
me, it's like a bank account to pay for me to just be able to spend my own money is actually ridiculous.
Yeah, it's actually, they shouldn't charge fees. Like, okay, banks, why are you charging? Like, if you look at overseas content creators, they don't charge fees on banks. Banks don't make money off bank accounts. But
the thing is, the existence of a bank isn't to actually make a profit off the fees or the transactions.
No, it's
to
track clients for loans. Where
exactly,
they make
yeah.
their big money from.
Yeah. Their money should actually come from interest
yeah.
and on money that they've put out there for investment or infrastructure building or whatever. That's what banks' business should be. But in South Africa, unfortunately, they are starting to milk us in every single little way.
We should start a movement, Rion. Bank fees must fall. Bank fees must fall. Yeah, so I think as more competitors starts popping up, you've got your Time Bank, your Bank Zero, the banks that charges no fees, that puts pressure on the big banks to realize that, okay, we're losing customers, we need to bring our fees down. So I think it will be a race to the bottom because they're really not making a lot of money in any case. So just drop the fees already. But yes, the more you're going to use the account for, if you're going to open a credit card, you're going to pay for a credit facility, you're going to pay for the physical card. So only do it if you really need it. Tell us in the comments what type of banks you use. So I'm with FNB, both my personal, my wife, my business, our business. So I'm an FNB fan, and you, Rion?
Yeah, so you really FNB supporter. So I'm in Standard Bank, and like you said, it's really my mom worked at Standard Bank when I was very small, and they were always with Standard Bank, so I almost inherited Standard Bank. I am happy with their service and what they provide me and the cost that, you know, I've actually looked at all of that. But yeah, for me, so because I'm also the what is it, professional client from them, I do get preferential rates. So my cars and my house is also on with them. I never had a reason to leave Standard Bank, to be honest. But I'm also not opposed of using any other bank. So, I mean, for me, it's all about service.
Yeah, exactly. I've had Absa bank account, a Nedbank bank account, FNB, Time Bank. So I'm more curious to kind of see what's out there and great content around it. But yeah, I mean, all of these banks are good. So let us know, which bank do you bank with and what do you use your bank account for? Have you had any good or bad experiences? Share them in the comments and we can have a discussion around that. But that wraps up today's session. Thank you so much for tuning in. My name is Peter. This is Rion. And this is the Braaibucks podcast. We look forward to seeing you in the next episode.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Lekker.